Matrix. I'm Jonathan, and I'm left of center.
And I'm Rich, and I tend to lean a little bit more to the right. But the bottom line is together we try to look for the balance of what it means to be human in today's world.
All right, let's get started, everyone. Welcome to Living in the Matrix. I'm Jonathan. This is my co-host, Rich. Say hello, Rich.
Hey, everybody. Great to be back, and great to have Cleburne back again. I think this is our third time together, Cleburne, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, third time. Thanks, guys, for inviting me back.
Awesome. Absolutely. So to everyone, just to introduce those who haven't met Cleburne, this is Cleburne Walker, very good friend of ours. We are have had some of the best conversations on this podcast with him, and Cleburne is one of the most insightful people I think we've had on. In terms of really understanding what's going on spiritually and energetically. And we just thought we'd invite him on today to have an open conversation. Welcome, brother. It's wonderful to have you back.
What do you guys got going on today? What's coming up in your world at the moment?
So just so you know, we just went to an ayahuasca retreat 2 weeks ago. And on Friday, we actually recorded we were just talking about opening the third eye before we came here. And Rich actually had an interesting conversation around your breathing process to open that up. But he was talking about a process that you had. Rich, you want to share that?
Well, obviously we have DMT naturally in our body, right? So, and going back to what I'm doing today, Cleburne, it's very superficial, but it is the first opening weekend of football. So I'm excited about that. So I've got that on the background, but so a lot of people have talked about the pineal gland. Dr. Joe's talked about it. You can see this pine cone shaped thing in ancient antiquity, right? The Assyrians had it. The Egyptians had it. You've talked about how you activate it through the Christ oil, right? Through the sacrum and the breathing and pushing it up into the pineal gland. I've seen a lot of different people try to use similar kinds of techniques. Some involve a lot of heavy breathing. Mm-hmm. Some actually just involve more of a clenching. And I've seen Breck, I think, try to do it in a different framework where he does it just more of as a physiological process. I don't even know if he hits it for something else. But I saw a gal who, for instance, came back from Dr. Joe. She's standing, just kind of hanging out and just showing a person how you might do that. And yet you've also talked about using a particular astrological sign. So whatever your sign is, your sun sign is, wait till the moon is there. Uh-huh. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, can you flesh that out a little bit more in terms of, because I think by you're activating your pineal gland, you've tapped into some stuff like this antenna. You've talked about this. You've got insights and wisdom that come to you, and you impart that. And it seems like everybody's got their own way of doing things. I think the source is big enough for everybody to tap into it in their own way. But can you tap into that a little bit more, describe how this is working for you, and what's been significant in your life over the last, you know, few months since we've chatted last?
The last one we might have to circle back to, what's been going on in my world. But the question you're asking, how to observe the Christ oil practice, which is effectively how to, it's all about returning to union with God, with source, with becoming one, to where your will and God's will can become indistinguishable. Mm-hmm. Like there stops feeling like a separation between you and God, not because the ego has determined itself to be the God of your life so that you might have a more pleasant worldly experience, which looks a lot like hedonism and narcissism and all that kind of stuff, but how to be more one with God, which reduces the feeling of that someday or in some other place or in some other plane of existence. It's right here, right now, always, all the time. And this illusion of the human experience is what's fleeting, is what's just being experienced, but it's not as real as the fact that me and God are inseparable eternally. There is no me and God. It's one thing, right? And then doing that in a way that allows you to be of service, of surrender, of being something of an open channel through your lived human experience. But how to when people start getting into the pineal gland, the mm-hmm. sacred Christ oil practice, all this kind of stuff, this is sort of like them becoming aware of a higher curriculum through the spiritual school on the earth plane, right? If you guys have ever heard me talk about before, there's kind of some basic levels of ascension. And on one of them, what happens is people have to realize they don't change the world. You know what I mean? The world as they have perceived it, people tend to not want to feel like they're leaving things undone or leaving the world as a mess, when what they will eventually start to realize is that was just a grade level, a level of perception and experience that remains the same, like a classroom, like a grade 9 classroom. That curriculum stays there for other people to go through that level of education. And it's not the curriculum, it's not the world that changes, it's the people who change as they move on to the next step. So a long-winded way to say how to like tangibly tap into through yourself, how to get into your own Christ oil, how to open your pineal gland. This starts appealing to people that are at those higher levels of spiritual classes in the earth school, right? Like some things just don't, you've outgrown too many things. So you guys just got back from an ayahuasca retreat. Here in a second, I'm going to have to ask you what you got from that.
The reason why I pointed that out, Cleburne, is because I had a tangible experience that I connected to. It was opening my third eye.
Yeah.
And it was very, very profound and powerful.
Okay. Do you want to share about it or get?
No, I just wanted to give you that context. Okay. That's what started the conversation for me, is that concept of, you know, over the last 2 years, we've been learning about, you know, the chakras and understanding that moving up the spine to your crown chakra. Mm-hmm. And it's that concept of you're trying to get to here, and that's where your pineal gland is, opening right. that up. But your breathing practice was really a process of making that energized, of
and it was
more, up that fluid.
And breathing was part of it, but it was more a process of observing a time of the month when there is a chemical process that happens within the body that can serve to open up different receptors in the brain naturally. Right. Oh, wow. It's like someone goes in there and flips on 100 new light switches and a bunch mm-hmm. of stuff just opens up. Ram Dass, I think it was, that had a great quote that said, psychedelics just put you in the room with Christ for a few hours. I still have not like journeyed or done any of that, but that's from what I gather from everybody's feedback. It is it's not like going and doing cocaine or something like
no,
that, right?
It's
a plant medicine that truly opens a pathway for some beautiful spiritual connection. And it can be that. It can be like a guidepost that like points you to the connection. Some people end up thinking, okay, the plant or the substance or the medicine or whatever is the place where I go to feel that connection. So then they make a false idol out of it. Mm-hmm. So this is one area of concern I have for me personally, just because addiction runs strongly in me and in my family and all that kind of stuff. So I've always been very leery about me personally. Like, I don't know how much I trust myself to touch things that could become potentially addictive, because I'm like a hyper-focused type of person anyways sometimes. So there's a good chance that I would wind up under a bridge, living under a bridge if I touch things that could potentially be bad for me. Off topic. Anyways, how to observe it? The Christ oil. We've talked about this before. There's a verse in the Bible that I could pull it up if you guys want the exact verse. It's in 1 John 1:22, I think, or 2:22. But it basically says, the anointing you received in Christ lives in you. It teaches you everything, so you don't need anybody to teach you anything else. Just live in Christ as he taught you to do, and it will teach you everything. So that anointing that lives in you. Now, the person who was speaking this was speaking to a crowd of people that had likely never actually seen Christ, right? So although they baptize people, it doesn't talk much about Jesus anointing anybody. So who are these people who definitely didn't get anointed by Jesus because they never met him, right? So when this is going on, what anointing that can live in you is he talking about? And then this ties into a practice that was observed in ancient Egypt and Kemetic spirituality through tons of other like Kabbalistic and other higher levels of esoteric spirituality. They get into this. And then the same thing that you were discussing, when you start looking at the shape of the brain, when you look at how certain parts of it look exactly like the way the Ark of the Covenant is described and the massive amount of parallels that are going on between the places of the brain, the functions of the brain. So many dots have to connect to overlap. It's like that part in Iron Man in the first one where he's in the cave and he's secretly building the Iron Man suit when they want him to build a missile. And he's got all of his blueprints laying there. And the guy's like, "You want to show me what you're building?" And he's like, "Flatten them out and look." And when he flattened all the papers out, then he can see. So there's a lot of these little dots that don't look like they're connected until you like stack them on top of each other. And you're like, "Oh crap, this, now I see the picture." So effectively, the human vessel is real through which we can experience, but it's not real in the sense that our consciousness, our soul, is existing in eternity, and it is not subject to whatever happens in the world. Right? The body is temporary; the soul is not. To put it simply, so what's going on here is only real for the sake of experience and for a very short while, but it's not real in the sense that where we reside before we got here and after we leave here. So how to tap into that stuff naturally through your own body, this process that where your brain secretes a chemical from around the pineal, from the claustrum, which is near there. It secretes a process that moves through the pineal and the pituitary gland. Now, when you look at the original Trinity, which is source, which is just God, and then masculine, feminine, right? The first initial split. So the claustrum, we consider that the first of the Trinity, and the masculine, feminine, which is like the pineal and the pituitary. One of them secretes a milky, like a white looking substance, and the other secretes like a yellowish substance, milk and honey, the land of milk and honey. Okay. And also,
do we know what those substances are, Kleber?
Yeah, there's a one. It's like chapter 7 of my book is all about this. And I make things very simple and condensed when it's in the book. But people go all out, like looking at diagrams and ways in which this is referenced. You can look it up scientifically. You can go to Google Scholar and look at peer reviewed reports and stuff about the chemicals that these organs produce. So the reason it's important to observe it during a certain time of month, I'll get into that, but effectively from source, the original split is masculine and feminine, right? So you could look at the pituitary and the pineal, which represent the milk and honey, which also, as these parallels begin to look more obvious, they represent Joseph and Mary, the masculine and feminine, right?
Which one is masculine?
Which one is the honey? I think it's the pituitary gland is the yellow one, and the pineal gland is the feminine one.
That makes sense.
I might have those backwards because I'm not fully caffeinated yet today. But from there, the reason it has to sort of diffuse and eventually come back up into one. This is the parallel of our spiritual journey, anyways, right? Like everything is the one that separated itself into the all to experience the joy of becoming the one again. Right. So, and just like the story of Jesus came down to be a family with Mary and Joseph, eventually returning back to the Father. That's what this process is going to represent. So I'll just kind of do it chronologically, right? From the claustrum begins a process that through the pineal and the pituitary produces these two chemicals that match up to the description of milk and honey, the land of milk and honey, the promised land. That chemical creates an oil that secretes through the brain. Now, this is like the Christ. This is why they call it the Christ oil, because the journey that it goes through is similar to the journey of Christ. It flows down your spinal cord, of which there are 33 vertebrae. Mm-hmm. Christ lived for 33 years, right? Once it goes all the way down into the sacrum, into the root chakra, you know, down into the lowest part of your spine. From there, it begins making its way back up the spine. Now, this entire process is a 2.5 day process. How long was Christ in the tomb?
Two and a half days.
Right. Whatever. And where was he crucified? On Golgotha, which means
place of the skull.
Place of the skull. Okay. So as it goes down and as this chemical begins to rise again up through your 33 vertebrae, as it passes along, it begins opening up extra nerve receptors along the spine. So the spatial awareness within the body to not just feel everything that's going on in your body, because there are trillions of cells within our body at all times, right? From the moment we're born, we are withholding life and death within us. Our bodies have a decay rate. They have a growth rate. Cells are being duplicated and dying and being born, right? Like we are living and dying simultaneously the whole time we're in this body. And within us is life and death at the cellular level. There is autonomous function taking place within us. There is a universe of existence, of life, right? Of cells that are making their own choices to attack white blood cells, to move nutrients, to carry chemicals. All this stuff is happening without our awareness. So increasing these nerve endings allows our spatial awareness to get a better feel for what's going on within the universe of which we are the God of at this little parallel level, right? And from there, it will allow you to physically feel outside of your body. Our electromagnetic field that we produce, you could call it the aura, but mm-hmm. science refers to it as an electromagnetic field, which scientifically we produce.
That's a field. The toroidal field.
Yeah. There's this is one of those areas, right? Where quantum science like shakes hands with spirituality, and they're sort of mm-hmm. talking about the same thing. And yes. And now our technology has ways to like validate it in a way that a logical mind can say, oh, well, that makes sense. And the spiritual mind will say, yeah, that's what people have been saying since the dawn of time, right? So the connection is now able to be observed without needing much faith. You can see these things more plainly. So as that spatial awareness within the body increases, the ability to feel your energetic field increases, which comes into play later, like things like Jesus being able to interact with people, healing by touching, healing by sending a word, like having like the same way I can physically reach out and move something with my hands, your ability to use your energetic field to go do things or feel things or perceive things begins increasing. And as this oil moves back up through the heart center, it helps for people who understand how chakra centers work. It helps sort of reharmonize those centers until ultimately moving back into the brain. And once there, if properly observed, again, it's like somebody goes in and flips on just a million light switches. It opens up millions of new neurons within the brain. So the brain's capacity to serve as a greater antenna, as a greater receptor, is increased exponentially. And again, this whole process takes 2.5 days. It happens while the moon is passing through your sun sign. Now, why is that mm-hmm. kind of funny, right? So the moon represents the feminine. That's the magnetism that affects our tides and the water and everything. The sun is the masculine. It affects the electricity, our like how it heats the earth through radio waves, radiation. It's the 24-hour daily sky. Schedule like a man. The moon is like the 28 day monthly cycle like a woman that goes through its phases. So these two things are required to take place, which is why during each month, that's why it's important. Your sun sign, when the moon, whatever phase it's in, it can be waning, crescent, descending, waxing,
right?
Full, whatever. It doesn't matter what phase the moon is in, but when it's passing through your sun sign every month, that's when your inner alchemical masculine and feminine is able to produce that new seed, that new Christ oil that if observed properly can go through its life cycle of its 33 years, go up and down its 33 vertebrae to effectively be, you know, and then people go further into this as far as like the descent into hell, which is sort of like the story of where Christ was while he was in the tomb to go conquer death and then ascend to eternal life. And then here in a minute, I want to circle back to this, about how the 40 days thing works, how that was such a prevalent thing throughout the Bible, but,
purgation, purification. Yeah.
But, for this part, anyways, this is again, it's in chapter 7 of my book, and it's easily YouTubeable, Googleable, science researchable, all this kind of stuff, that there's a physical chemical process that happens in the body. The first time I ever heard about this was Jim Carrey. I saw like a little YouTube.
No, I saw that. I was going to ask you about that. This is the Santa Claus effect.
Yeah. And that's another one where there are so many stories that overlap where you're like, okay, mm-hmm. well, you know, so that's another one, like the path back home, right? Like the map back to home. works for anybody. Like the Easter eggs are spread out everywhere. So no matter where you start and what resonates with you, you can start seeing these little Easter eggs that point you in a certain direction. And eventually you can see the same Easter eggs in all these other spaces. So then you're like, okay, well, that is like a common denominator. That is a truth that's just being told in this different setting or this different language or this different mythological, you know, story or whatever. But they all start to stack together. And yeah, Jim Carrey was the first time I heard it. It was like a 1 minute long YouTube short. And I was like, what? And then, you know, then I just, all of a sudden my algorithm decided to cram that down my face. Like everything I looked at was that topic. And then when I looked into it more, I was like, okay, this isn't just some nonsense. And then I began practicing it, a little over a year ago. And that seemed to greatly, expedite the rate at which Cleburne was able to step aside more and just open up more to be in flow, to be of service, I guess.
So Cleburne, let me ask you this: from what did that feel like? In other words, what is that experience as you're going through it feel like? And what you talk about being able to be more in flow, but what was that like?
So the monthly experience, so I started doing this over a year ago. I fast, except for last month I didn't, but almost every single month I do a 3-day water fast. This month I did, which just ended yesterday morning. But what it feels like is a lot. It's different every month. It took about 6 months of practicing at it and getting a feel for what sort of thoughts were going through my mind, what was, you know, what sort of ways in which I was wrestling with myself or, you know, asking like, what are you doing? Why are you, you know, like going back and forth of which voices in my head I'm hearing and which ones are which and all that kind of stuff. And anyways, yeah, it took about 6 months to really feel it, to really physically feel it kick in.
Thank you. It's taken me 3. I have not felt anything yet. I'm just going through the motions, trying to do my best.
So that's part of it. Going through the motions is sort of part of it. Especially like if you're fasting or definitely like abstaining from sex in all ways, even mentally and stuff like that, like putting energies aside that tether you to the flesh experience as much as possible. Right? Like we have lives, we have to show up to our responsibilities. I've got to, you know, we've got work and kids and stuff, but as much as you could effectively just stop being all the things you have been in the habit of being and leave a ton of space to say, in this space, I invite, you know, invite the Holy Spirit, invite God, invite however you want to see it. I would like this space to be filled with that, with God, whatever, however you like to feel about it, but I am carving out a space and I'm going to leave it empty, which feels really weird because most of us have a hard time not filling all of the empty spots in our calendar, filling all the empty moments in our day. Like, you know, especially now, like culturally, we have a hard time being bored, right? So imagine being bored and hungry, maybe horny, maybe feeling like you're being lazy, maybe wondering why you're doing this, or is it stupid or whatever, and just leaving everything on pause for a period of time so that your body can put more energy towards what it's doing instead of also digesting all the new food you're putting it in and also dealing with the stress hormones we add by thinking about this project we're working on or remembering this time we did something super cringy when we were a kid and all the little things that we do in our head that trigger chemical responses within our body constantly, right? Like, you know, and science shows this too, right? Like if you're on a VR machine and you think you're on a high line, you know, your body will display the same chemical reaction as if you were really somewhere in danger, right? Like if you sat down and really imagine like a tiger running in the room and chasing you, you would start to feel the physical reaction of fight or flight, just like it was really happening. The body doesn't know the difference because the brain is the reality. It's the truth center. The brain may receive data that it perceives through the senses, but it's ultimately still not real, right? Like, I can see you guys right here, but if I close my eyes and I don't see you, I still start to like put a picture in my mind. And that's what my emotions and my reactions go off of. So all that to say, our brain constantly creates chemical reactions in our body. So how can we stop that? How can you pause that long enough to let everything truly like settle and leave a space for the Holy Spirit to come in and like do like a factory reset almost, right? Like a, like turn it off and back on sort of thing. And that takes practice to leave a space for no reason other than just to leave a space. And then have no expectations for what's going to come from it or when's going to come from it. Now, that being said, especially for the first handful of months, it's pretty important to start and end with a meditation. In the first one, to start with a meditation that is sort of opening this 3-day holy period, this ceremony, with an intention.
Okay.
Whatever it is, totally personal to you, whatever your intention is, right? Like, I hope by the end of this, I figure out how to make $1 million. I hope by the end of this, I figure out how to know your will more clearly, Father. Somebody who's like super, you know, in that space may look at it, right? Like, whatever your intention is, I don't know what my intention is. I just know I want to grow closer to the divine. And I believe this is a path through which that can happen. Whatever the intention is, I want to find a spouse, whatever. I want my child to heal who's battling a terrible sickness, right? Like, give it up. And then from that moment on, literally don't think about it again. Don't think about it. Because every time we think about something, we're checking in on it, which is looking for confirmation, which is saying, I really don't know yet until I see proof.
You're reinforcing the doubt.
Yeah. We're reinforcing the doubt every time we check in on it, right? Like at no point, that I always draw back to Jesus as like the ultimate example of the highest form of oneness with God while here on the earth, right? Because that's the whole point of that story. And it's, for people who don't like that, they can find that exact same story told throughout centuries in other religions. But we live in the Christ timeline right now. Just look at our calendar. Like we live in the age of the Christ consciousness timeline. So that's the centerpiece for which we can all draw back to and see like an ineffable template through which to follow. But at no point did he like say a prayer and ask for somebody to be healed and then be like, look around and be like, is it going to work? And then when they did it, and then when they woke up, was he like, yes, totally worked, and like cheer about it and act all pumped up, right? It was just like he didn't ask for it, he didn't wait to see if it was going to happen, he commanded it. So that's sort of like what this is. When we're starting your meditations and opening with an intention, we're not at a place yet to be able to command your material world to change instantly. The reason for that is because if you could do that, or if you did do that, it would make you think you were crazy. If right now, if you looked at your lamp and said, you know, turn into a bottle, and it did it, you wouldn't think, of course that's what would happen. I'm a master of my reality. You would think, holy shit, what else have I been missing? What does this mean? That the scope of what you had previously perceived to be real would be so busted wide open. We would be like Peter on the water who sinks. We were doing it for a minute, and then we look around and be like, this is information overload. And we go back to what we felt was the way things should work, right? So this process speeds up the rate at which you can accept how malleable your experience of reality can be. So again, starting with an opening intention, setting your intention, and then don't think about it again. Even when it tries to pop up, just shut it down. Don't argue with yourself. Don't look in on it. Don't look for validation or wrestle with the fact of, am I worthy of it? Am I guilty of anything that would make this not happen? Is it selfish? Is it righteous? None of that shit. Just set the intention in the meditation, done. And then for the remainder
Can I interject real here?
Yeah.
Cleburne, because I like where you're going with this, and definitely in letting go with Dr. Hawkins, the idea, or even in Vedic thought, the idea of grasping and reaching and obsessing over things. That's how you lose them, right? We've gotten down that path. But in meditation, most folks in meditation, and these are solid practices, they think of having a thought as not a bad thing. Your thought is not your mind. So can you help me understand, because I think there's a difference between having a thought and letting it go, and it's out there, right? They consider it, you've got a disco ball. Here's the analogy they use. Here's a disco ball, and you've got these thoughts. Let them, like, pretend they're snowflakes, so they go to the ground, so you don't give them any power. But there's a big difference between lusting or obsessing over that intention, right, and just and it dwelling in your mind versus like it's there, but I shouldn't beat myself up because it pops up. I just let it kind of go away. I mean, how do you get to that point? Do you understand where I'm coming with this? Because in meditation, people are like, don't let your thoughts kill you because that's not who you are. Uh-huh. In fact, acknowledge the thoughts. Like there's a meditation where you've just got them sitting out there and they're just kind of swimming around out there and you're not dwelling on them. They're just, okay, yep, there's some anger there. There's some fear. There's some trepidation and you've got it kind of floating around. But do you understand where I'm going with this? I'm just trying to figure out how you can get to that space of that even the thought of it is not even there. Like even in like almost if you could say that this thought is, I'm not freaking out about it. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving it any weight, but it just popped up. And you see what I'm saying?
Yep, totally. So not forming an attachment to thoughts as they come up, observing them, maybe even seeing if there's something they need you to see, that there's something those thoughts need to tell you or reveal to you. And then sort of, like you said, letting them pass, letting them go, bringing your awareness just back to the stillness you're in or whatever. But what I'm saying is for that opening ceremony at the beginning of this 3-day Christ oil practice, as you set your intention after the meditation's over for the remainder of the 2 or 3 days.
3 days.
Yeah. Don't like in your conscious moving about waking daily life, don't let your intellect, don't let our thinking mind draw back to it. Don't let it become a focal point for these 3 days. It was dropped off in the astral. It was laid at God's lap and then leave it there. And then during these 3 days, there's, you know, if somebody's fasting, if they're abstaining from different things, if they're observing extra cold plunges or saunas or, whatever, salt baths or different types of meditations throughout the day, doing breath work, doing yoga, whatever they're going to do that they feel like they're prioritizing their connection to spirituality during this time. And then at the end, you know, at the end of it, when the moon is about to pass through to exit your sign, 10 or 15 minutes before, sit into a meditation long enough to where you'll kind of be in that theta state, where you'll be in that relaxed, settled state. And then just from that point, be open to receive whatever it is towards the tail end of it. Yes. Breathe intentionally. There's a couple of practices you can do to add pressure to the pineal gland that help to declassify it or activate it. Once you feel it really kick in, I don't know that you need to do it anymore after that, but it takes a few months of getting a personal feel for it. There's all kinds of little tactics, all kinds of little ways you can do it, but it's meant to be a personal experience, right? Just like a workout program, I guess. Like somebody could give you an outline of a routine that's a good idea, but you're going to go in and eventually figure out different little nuances of how your body likes to move, how you like to set your pace as you go through it and all this kind of stuff. And it's a template is meant to get you started, but it's ultimately meant to be something that's personal and for you and only you, right? And that's kind of how this practice is. As far as after you've done this a few times, how to meditate in that space where you're not attached to your thoughts. So the same way I was talking about the way that the body within it has so many different functions happening that we don't think about. Like when I meditate, and chapter 3 in my book starts with a somatic meditation of sitting into the body in a way where you realize you're whatever you identify, however you think that the I am part of you, is a consciousness that's in the body that has its own consciousness, right? You can sit and observe your breath. Your body will breathe for you. Your cells going all through your body are repairing things and healing things and keeping things running for you so that you might experience through the body's 5 senses. So I'm in the body, I'm one with the body, but I'm clearly not the body. Just like I'm in God, I'm one with God, but I'm not God, right? I might be a child, but I'm not the father from this level of perception. So it's similar. So sitting into the body and gaining greater awareness of the body and how you are tethered to its senses and its functions, but it's not totally you. Will start to make it easier to feel yourself as one with the divine, like as one. But anyways,
I call it empathizing with God.
Okay.
In that Rich and I have this conversation probably over the last 2 years, about 2 years ago now, probably here this month, I started a practice of acknowledging there is no separation from God. And the best way to get into that flow for me is to empathize. Like, how does God feel about me? From God's perspective of love, there is no separation. So how do I place myself there? That's right. What I call empathizing with God. It's putting myself in God's shoes, which is where I come from, but also seeing the dichotomy of how God sees Jonathan, my avatar, and realizing that, yeah, there is no separation, but my body feels separated because I've lived an entire life as Jonathan. And so as I empathize with God, I remove that connection. And I think that connection eventually, this is what I think happened in our ayahuasca retreat, is it opens the pineal gland, which is a third eye, and you feel that connection come through. Like, we had some pretty powerful experiences of removing that connection or that disconnection and kind of closing the gap. But most people grow up with a sense of, no, I am not God. I am totally separate than God. And that's a journey for a lot of people to kind of close that chasm. Mm-hmm.
That's everyone and everything's journey, right? Like, like some aspect of God was chucked as far away from knowledge of self as source as could be. And then it moves through infinite life cycles until reaching sort of the human experience, which is the bridge between the material and the divine. And then from here, we can start to experience ourselves as one with God, but knowingly able to experience, right? We're not like the elements of the earth. We're not like fire and dirt. We're not like animals. You know what I mean? Like creatures that are observantly less self-aware, if you will.
They don't have a prefrontal cortex. That's one of the distinctive differences.
Yeah. They're just functioning on autopilot, right? Like, like lions and wildebeests in Africa today are doing the same shit they were doing 4,000 years ago versus human development does advance, does evolve, right? Like, and that's by design. And we're able to see that so that we can look at ourselves and realize there's an evolutionary aspect to us. And it's not just about our technology and what we do at the human level and at the earth level, but it ties into the fact that we are here to be the bridge between the corporeal and the ethereal, right? And the reason, let's think of it this way. If you were original source, all there was just your self-aware, your conscious self-awareness, right? You were all there is and nothing else exists except just your awareness. Like, that might be peaceful for a minute until it started to feel boring. And then how long might it until it started to feel almost lonely, right? So again, and the creator created things in which order? Like a big mush of things formed into an order, formed into what we know as the loading dock, right? Like the stage was set, all the plants, animals, the earth, the waters, everything kind of in a certain order from broader to finer. And then the final thing of creation was humanity. And then through our experience in earth, through our ability to experience duality, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, so that we may be as gods. So as we are dropped off in this classroom, where from that point, God only kind of interjects every once in a while when there needed to be a big course correct. From that point.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So from that point, as you notice the consciousness of mankind offers the ability to stay the same, to fall into degradation, to funnel up. It's always there across what we currently observe as a timeline. The same themes for human possibility have always and seem to always exist. Like, you can make of life whatever you want to from a spiritual, conscious, character level. And then from there, as people choose to lean more into their evolution, to deny their baser instincts, to deny their, physical impulses, their desire to like be hateful, to be violent, to be, you know, impulsively lustful, all these sort of things, to give into vices, as people choose to move through right action in the world, through good character, through these applications that lend themselves to spiritual maturity, eventually people get to that point where they transcend the human experience, much like Christ did when he left and was not just a human anymore, right? People couldn't touch him the same. And he mentioned when you are in heaven, people won't be married like they are on earth. They'll be like the angels of heaven, which is existing in a different level than just base physical union. People will be, have that sort of inner harmony of it, of masculine and feminine, that inner yes. androgyny.
It's the two shall become one.
Yeah. Right. And each individual will be not in need mm-hmm. of a companion, because it's no longer about procreation. It's about existing at a different level. So that, imagine the creator creates all these things, creates all these animals, all this stuff. That's great. Now, what do I have? Well, if I make some children, eventually they may grow up and be like an equal. So then I won't be alone. It's like the most layman's way to kind of dumb down that concept. So as humanity is the bridge between the corporeal and ethereal, we reach before getting all the way back into total oneness, where there is literally nothing else except the one. At those higher levels, there's a community of very, I don't like the word enlightened, but very evolved expressions of consciousness that can exist in a sense of community that allows for that fulfillment of connection that we are all born with, right? Mm-hmm. Like that we're all born with this desire for connection. God saw that it wasn't good for the man to be alone, so he made a helpmate, right? Like this is the best that I can feel is that this all also stemmed from God desiring companionship.
Of course.
To a degree. So how can you have a companion with somebody that can't see you on your level, that can't speak your language, that can't understand what you understand, right? Like I can tell some jokes and have some laughs with my kids when they're three, but I can't have the same conversations with them that we can have, right? I can't have the same conversations with somebody that maybe you guys and your spouse can have the best conversations, right? Because you are able to connect in every level on every way and have no need to hide anything because you've seen everything, right? So an entire society of people that have collectively absorbed all of the possibilities that can be experienced at the human level. So moving to that place where they're able to perceive telepathically, to heal instantly, to be able to be seen telepathically because they have nothing to hide or be embarrassed of, or to feel a need to coerce an outcome through manipulation or anything like that. They're just totally able to be seen. Right. Like now imagine Christ. He's like, look, you guys at this level are just going to crucify me and I'm not even going to fight you over it. But where I'm going from here, the people that will be with me will be operating much differently. They will be like I am. They will not be like I hope we could all be here. I don't change you. I hold true to my nature, which takes me somewhere else. And eventually everybody kind of makes their way there also. And then at that place, there's this community that is much more godlike, much more Christ-like, and existing in a very fulfilled manner of connection before kind of finishing those final levels back into oneness with Source.
Well, I think that's the thing that to me, one of the most important things I realized this year is the Garden of Eden is not just about the tree of knowledge. It's also about the duality split between masculine and feminine. And each mm-hmm. human being lives in one of those frames as a mm-hmm. dominant pattern. I'm either dominant masculine or dominant feminine. And Christ consciousness is the merging of the two.
Yeah.
It's coming into terms
with balance. Yeah.
Yes. That's what we've talked about a lot this year, Rich, is, and I think that's what we're experiencing right now.
Right.
I think the masculine has waged war for 6,000 years around that time. And we're now shifting into a reality that, hey, it's gotta be balanced. And we've got social media. So everybody's having millions of conversations around it, mm-hmm. of what it means to be masculine and feminine. And Christ consciousness is coming along and saying, well, guess what, people? It's both. You are meant to have both in balance.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're at.
One of the things I wanted to bring up, though, Cleburne, because what you were just describing earlier seems to be like painting the Gnostics as actually being right. So the Gnostics came along, you know, in the first or second or third century, and there were these Greeks for a long time. And so their idea was, and one of the reasons why a lot of the Gnostics rejected Jesus coming in the flesh is because they said flesh is evil, right? So you've got spirit is good and flesh is evil. The demiurge is this emanation of the one source. Like Aristotle had the uncaused cause or the prime mover. And so you had pure goodness. And then in their emanations of creation, things got worse and worse and worse and worse.
Right.
So one of the things that were brought up is Christ could not have come in the flesh because, of course, that's evil. He only had the appearance of being in the flesh. And John, in his epistle, said that's what Antichrist is. Antichrist is somebody who says he didn't come in the flesh. Then you've got this idea of a lot of Christians saying, hey, when we go to die, we're just going to go into heaven. We're going to be up in the clouds. It's just going to be a state. Right. And then a lot of current theologians, including N.T. Wright, say, no, guys, it's going to be a new heavens and a new earth. God isn't destroying anything. He's actually bringing Jerusalem back. He's bringing heaven and Eden back physically to this planet. We're going to have resurrected bodies. But what I'm getting at through all this, you know, idea is it is about spirit ultimately, isn't it, Cleburne? Like we're ultimately, these spirits are eternal. Our souls are eternal. This is what passes through time. And we've gone through these avatars and iterations of experience. So which one is it? You know, I'm a little confused in that regard.
At the end of this, I'm going to touch on how you mentioned that there's social media and we're having millions of conversations. That's an expression of where the collective consciousness is currently at, that we're this close to existing at a mutually agreed psychic level of communication. Everything's happening faster, instantaneously, and more openly, which is why we're moving quicker and quicker and quicker. Time seems to be moving much faster, right? There's our consciousness is not existing at the slower in the mud pace it used to. So what you're talking about? There are a lot of people that are still trying to make sense in their logical mind that can easily be tricked. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I just shared a few videos on my Instagram yesterday about this. Just there are endless studies that you can watch yourself be tricked in real time by yourself. Right. Like, you've all seen the videos where somebody's saying something and then there's a script on a screen and you read it and you hear what you're reading and then they change the wording and the audio is the same. What's being said is the same, but your brain will hear what the words say, right? So there's all kinds of stuff like that. So trying to make sense of the divine through our five physical senses is dumb. We already know that we can only perceive a tiny fraction of the observably known light and sound waves in existence. Right? Like if I walk outside and I stick my hand up, I can feel the heat of the sun on my palm. I'm not touching the sun directly, but something between the sun and me is touching right now. There's something that is reaching across time and space that is allowing us to be connected. I can feel the heat of it, right? So that thing that my eyes can't see, but my hands can feel, that is what we need to start being able to accept, that we can see, just not with these eyes. As our ability to feel our aura, our electromagnetic field increases, we will be able to see the field of which reality is.
Perceive the field. Yeah. You're actually seeing it with your third eye, if you would.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So the people that are like, how do we get from here to there? Real quick, this is Jacob's ladder, right? He went to sleep. He had a vision of a ladder, angels coming and going, right? There are constant steps that are like locked, right? Like that is a very simple way to imagine it. There is some perceivable link that takes every tiniest step from this level to the next level to the next between here and the divine. The story of Christ, the person of Christ, is that ultimate expression where, as the Bible is the story of the evolution of consciousness, where in the early Old Testaments, man and God were like a mirror, right? So man was like at the earliest level, from the ground, from the thorns and the thistle, by the sweat of your brow, your work, and this is for your sake. Mankind's consciousness started right here. So since we were here, and since mankind and God are always a mirror, God was so far away. And it was this divine thing that's so much better than us, or so judgmental of us. And so like, right. My name is jealous. Like what kind of
jealous God? Yep.
It's pretty egotistical. That seems like a match for man, right? Like to think of at that level. And then we have Jacob, who has a story about Jacob's ladder. He wrestled the angel at Peniel. Wrestled an angel all night until you bless me. I'm not letting go until you bless me. And they asked the angel, what's your name? And the angel said, well, where is it that you're asking me? And so He got his blessing. He said, this is pineal, and the sun shone on him, right? So that's a story about a man who wrestled with spirituality until the thing that can't be explained made itself clear to him, and the light hit him. His pineal gland was open. He was blessed at pineal, mm-hmm. right? That's what that story is talking about, like waking up. The story of Moses asking, who are you? And God said, I am. Now go and tell them I am sent you. That's gathering the ability to speak on your own authority. I am. I am sent me. I'm here. Let my people go. There's a whole other story about the crossing of the desert. Won't get into that one. But effectively, Christ is that point. Whereas mankind was here and God was here. And Abraham's like, God's telling me I got to sacrifice my son. He's playing these games with me just to see how loyal I am. But I am. And as mankind was moving up, now it's like, you know what? That was my dad. I'm going to wrestle with an angel. You give me a blessing, right? And then there's Moses. It's like, I don't know what's going on, but I am going to free my people. And as that happens, how does God's behavior change? It keeps getting closer and closer to man, more compassionate, more willing, until they meet in Jesus. And then it becomes hard to tell which is which. Is he a man or is he God, right? And then from that point, what is God's involvement with humanity for the whole rest of the time after Jesus came? God was like, this was the example. This is where we become one. And from here, there hasn't been a big need for any more stories, right? Of like floods and firebombing Babylon and all that kind of stuff, right? So that is effectively it. The story of the elevation of consciousness. We start here. We perceive God as somewhere separate. The gap closes and closes and closes until you have Jesus, which is both. Was here. Was only here as a metaphor. How it doesn't matter how people look at it. What matters is the entire world in which we live is revolving around that centerpiece through which everybody can draw back to as the ultimate template of what we are becoming.
And that is Christ consciousness. I think we're entering into an age where the barriers between the two are dramatically being rendered unusable. It's like it's virtually. Like people are waking up to this. I think this is what a lot of people are waking up to. Cleburne, you are always one of our most fascinating guests. I appreciate you so much for coming on with us today. And Rich, thanks for being here too. I know you were feeling a little sick.
Yeah.
You always have an open spot here, brother, because I think you're one of the few voices that I see consistently going back to love and truth, but mixed with a really deep understanding of science and how the body works. And I appreciate having you on because you have such a deep sense of connectivity to these ideas. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah. And Cleburne, also just thank you for the additional edification. I didn't try any fasting prior. By the way, my times have shifted. I used to be in the early part of the month back in, let's say, July. And then all of a sudden in August, it moved to like the 22nd. So right. It's really weird. I'm like, what's up with that? I got to wait longer.
Our calendar doesn't follow the moon like, you know, previous cultures in history, like the ancient Hebrews were a moon culture, right?
Of
like,
of course,
that's what, like Sabbath was exactly. Sundown to sundown because their day started at sundown, right? They were a moon culture and all this stuff. So the moon moves through a 27 and a half, a 28 and a half day cycle. Our calendars are 30, 31. So yeah, it starts like, you know, it doesn't line up on the same days each month, but
yeah,
the moon is the, you know, like the calendars and the clock we made up. And if God has such a thing as a clock and a calendar, it would be the stars and the moon, which in Genesis 1, chapter 1, verse 11, God said, let there be lights in the firmament for signs and for seasons and for years and to divide the day from the night, but for signs, right? That's how the Magi, that's how sailors used to, you know, get across the oceans and stuff like that. So just culturally, we have stopped looking at the stars in a wholesome, natural way, like a way in which we were meant to be connected to the way things operate. It's not because we've lost our way, but like you said, right now, we're having conversations at such an exponential, like the rate at which we're shifting is about to be like almost instant. The first time we talked, I mentioned that, you know, 6 months from now, the way in which you experience world, the things that are of importance to you or whatever, won't look anything like it did at that point. And I don't know how much that held up in y'all's world or anything, but mine is wildly different than where I was existing 6 months ago. The pace at which time just seems to fly by stopped making sense in like 2019, I guess. It's just zooming right by at this point. How's it already almost 2025? But
I know it has done that.
Yeah, but I think everybody's in a pregnant pause right now, waiting for something. I think everybody's like, something's got to change.
I can't believe you just said
feel like that.
Yeah, I can't believe you just said pregnant. That's, you know, yeah. But again, that's like the, so you remember how the first time we chatted, we were talking about how the word matrix comes from the Bible and it means womb. Mm-hmm. And if you think about that, when we were in our mother's womb forming, taking shape, once we reach maximum capacity for that womb, we have to come out, right? When our head starts poking through, we call that crowning. Now, mm-hmm. Now in Christianity, we call it being born again. In Eastern religions, once your crown chakra opens, that's the same thing. So when you are mm-hmm. born again is the same as when your crown chakra opens. Crowning, crown, right? That's kind of what's happening. So in this womb that we've been in, this womb of the human experience, many of us have reached term. We are at term. We are crowning, right? Like we're birthing into another level of experience, and it's many people all at once. This is the second coming of Christ, the coming on the clouds, which was the colloquialism that was a military term that meant when you're on guard at a city wall and you saw people invading, if there was a bunch of them and they were coming fast, they would kick up a lot of dust. So you would clouds of dust, right? So you would go down and report and say, hey, these guys are coming and they're coming on the clouds, which meant a big intentional force is heading our way. So when Jesus comes back on the clouds, it just means like in a big way, right? So that is spiritually what's been sweeping over so many people. So many people are at term spiritually. Their crown chakra is opening to allow them to be born again. And the collective consciousness of society, just like a cell in the body, starts to duplicate all the coding within it. And then it splits into two, right? So sometimes it's an exact duplicate and then one dies and the other lives. Sometimes, like in the womb, one cells, they form and they split, and then one starts to become part of a bone and one starts to become part of a muscle, right? They become a different thing. So the collective consciousness of society right now is truly doing that, where a lot of us are existing in this space where we are existing, where the things that are important and of value to us is this way. And there's going to be a whole other little pocket that just we don't perceive where they go, what they do, how that works.
Yeah, this is a very strange time to be alive. It's one of the richest, most interesting times to be alive. I think we are in. I've told Rich this. I think we are in an apocalypse, and I think the apocalypse is the unveiling. And for those that are masculine dominant, we've been in a 6,008-year age of masculine dominance, and it's going to shift dramatically. And for those who get stuck there, it's going to be awful because mm-hmm. it's going to be this experience of like, wait a minute, how do I make room for the feminine? Because Jesus, the Christ consciousness of Jesus said, we're in grace, people. Like, stop worrying about it. We're in grace. There is this thing called grace.
Yeah.
But it's taken us really 2,000 years for the church to kind of acknowledge grace. Mm-hmm. Like I grew up and that shift is almost like a call bullshit and say, okay, people, we need to be about grace because that's what empowers the Christ consciousness. And I think it's just showing up all over the place where people like what's going on in Israel, which always captures my attention. Uh-huh. Just even in the United States, which is sort of the dominant masculine kind of idea, it's crumbling in a really interesting way. So the matrix is fine. It's dying.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dying. Cleburne, you are always an amazing guest. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for coming here today. Rich, any final words?
No, I'm good for that last bit. I'm just about the details behind things, you know, the fasting and the intentionality at the beginning is going to be a new one for me. So I'm hoping to dive into it this month. Cleve, I really appreciate how practical, how tapped in you are spiritually, but at the same time, how practical I think you want to make this in your book. I can just tell the intentionality that you're giving it is to say there's a lot of crazy ephemeral stuff that is a lot of research. You know, you've talked about thousands of years of different things, of practices, but yeah. you're bringing that to something that yeah. can be useful. And I love can, where you're going. Yeah. yeah.
It's because people can like spend their whole life, you know, becoming archaeologists and historians and all this stuff and trying to intellectualize their way to God. But we've already we can establish in 2 minutes that the brain can't be trusted anyways. So how do you really connect with God? We got to shut up and just sit still. So that's it. Anytime I see a door opening, it starts pointing to a lot of evidence that gives my brain permission. Some people are like, oh, there's some evidence I need to study further. But how long do you have to go until you say, okay, wait a minute, I've seen enough that confirms I can touch, I can be in the embrace of God right now. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? That's it. So it's a process of going inward to stop looking out at the hologram and start moving inward into that connection of oneness with the great I am. Mm-hmm. That's what it's really all about.
I love it.
Yeah. Cleveland awesome, Walker, sir. People, he's always one of our most fascinating guests. I love it. To all of our listeners out there, this has been another wonderful episode of Living in the Matrix. We always talk about really important subjects. That's the thing that I love about our podcast the most. Cleburne, thank you. Rich, it's good to see you, brother. To all of our listeners, please comment and let us know. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. And follow us on Instagram, Living in the Matrix. It's the weekend here. This is a special episode on Sunday. Cleburne, thank you. And to everybody out there, much love to you.